It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Brady Forrest is here from the WEAR conference. We'll talk about location, open street maps, Google Maps, and maps of all kinds. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 139, recorded March 21st, 2012. Wage cut. This Week in Google is brought to you by Ford, featuring Curve Control to help protect against crashes on curves. Look for Curve Control right now in the 2013 Ford Taurus. And learn more at Ford.com/cars/Taurus. And by GoToMyPC. GoToMyPC app, so the missing link for remote access to turn your iPad and iPhone into your office computer. Visit GoToMyPC.com for your free 30-day trial. Use the offer code TWIG. It's time for TWIG, This Week in Google. And a great panel assembled. First of all, let's start with Gina Trapani, who is, of course, a regular, the founding editor of Life Hacker, blogger at smarterware.org, the author of Think Up, that great Twitter app at thinkupapp.com. Hello, Gina.
Hello. Great to be here.
Nice to see you.
Good to see you, too.
On the other side, we have Mr. Jeff Jarvis, who today is in Stockholm, Sweden.
Hey.
What are you doing in Sweden?
I'm speaking at the Web Days conference. It's a different word in Swedish, but I can't say it, tomorrow. And so I'm over here, one of my favorite cities on Earth. I'll tell the story tomorrow, but I actually came here the first time after having visited the first IKEA in America.
Wow.
And I said, any country that can make this, I got to go see.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, tell us the name of the hotel, because you're getting incredible bandwidth.
Yes, this is the Scandic Grand Central Hotel. They're nice enough to have me in a conference room where I'm getting 58 down and 72 up. And I'm not pink, people. I'm not pink.
There's no buffer bloat either. This is the best. I mean, I can't believe the quality. This is fantastic. This is better than satellite.
I'm moving to Sweden.
We should all move to Sweden. All our hosts should live in Sweden from now on. Jeff is a professor of journalism at the City University of New York, the author of Public Parts, and blogs at buzzmachine.com. We also have a guest in studio with us, which is really nice, Bradley Forrest. Hello, Bradley. Brady. Not Bradley. Brady. I added an L. Good to see you, Brady. O'Reilly. He is also responsible for the O'Reilly Location Conference, the WEAR Conference at WEARConf. .com, normally in Seattle, but down here, and it's nice to have you.
Thanks.
Welcome. Yeah, appreciate you coming in. Location is big, isn't it? Holy cow.
Yep, and Google is a big part of it.
Yeah, no kidding. In fact, you got a Google map right on the front of your website there, but also everything else. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. But before we go much farther, breaking news. I think a huge story. Zynga just bought OMG Pop for $200 million.
And Henry Blodgett says they left $800 million on the table.
Really? You think it's a billion-dollar company? OMG Pop. OMG Pop's an interesting company because they've been around for some time making apps that hadn't really gone anywhere. And then they made something called Draw Something, which came out.
Last week, it was a Sunday. I watched you play it for an hour.
I played it on the air. For an hour. One of the most fun things ever. The idea is it's kind of Pictionary, basically. I mean, there's nothing new under the sun. They give you a word. It's the Merv Griffin style of gaming, in which really the game is trivially easy and makes you feel good about yourself. You know, Merv designed Wheel of Fortune so that the contestants on screen were incentivized to be slow solving the puzzles. The longer they went, the more they'd make. And he's brilliant because people at home would solve them immediately because they were stupidly easy, and they feel all the viewers go, "I'm so smart," and I'm smarter than that guy. Unlike Jeopardy, which makes you feel stupid, Wheel of Fortune makes you feel smart. Hence, Merv Griffin, multi billionaire. OMG Pop, same thing. It's a very simple game. They give you words. You can choose an easy word or a hard word. You draw the word. Somebody has to guess it, and they even get Wheel of Fortune style letters to choose from, you know, and it's fun. You cannot really go wrong with it. It's a lot of fun, even if you can't draw. In fact,
are you paired randomly or
no? You choose. You can choose. There it is. You can choose your friends. See, nobody draws that well, by the way. No. Even my mom, who's an artist, her stuff looks like stick figures and crap. And that's the other thing. It just because nobody on a you know now it's on Android, it's on iPhone, it's on iPad, but anybody's drawing with their finger can't draw. Nobody draws, you know. You can't draw well, even if you're an artist.
Well, plus they feed you the letters, like Jeopardy.
Yeah, Jeopardy. It's very, couldn't be easier. Or Wheel of Fortune. It couldn't be easier.
Oh, yeah.
But Leo, you have a spin.
You have a phablet.
You do.
Well, and that's the, I have a little advantage. Unfortunately, I'm still a crappy artist, but I can play it on my note with my spin, my S pen. And so I'm not drawing with a finger. I'm drawing with a pressure-sensitive stylus. And still my stuff looks stupid, so there's no excuse, frankly, for how badly I play. But it's a fun game. It's actually more fun on the iPad just because it's bigger.
Yeah, I was going to say, the bigger screen kind of gives you a little bit of an advantage,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, but then you're drawing with your fingers, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyways, $200 million, and that's the funny part. They could have gotten a billion, you think? No.
Let's see, Simon Califf, CEO of mobile analytics firm Flurry, according to Henry Blodgett, said that it's sold way too early, leaving $800 million on the table. Is that nuts, asks Henry. Based on draw something's early growth, no, it's not nuts. But, of course, that's just their one big success.
Right.
It's 6 weeks old. Top app.
6 weeks old. Basically, they made $200 million in 6 weeks.
Yeah. Top app in 79 countries, been downloaded 20 million plus times, has 12 plus million active daily users, generates $100,000 of revenue per day.
That's the interesting number.
Yeah, but
it?
The company's been around for a long time. So It's just like Rovio in that they've had a string of games that didn't really go anywhere. So it's not like they made $200 million in 6 weeks.
But I think that's where the billion comes from, because Rovio is worth a billion.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
But there's characters.
On the strength of one, but there are characters. And they can sell action figures and plushies pillows.
And a movie.
There's an Angry Birds movie?
I've heard that there's talks.
Of course there is.
They want to go for a Disney franchise around the characters.
It is worth a billion.
Wouldn't you go to a theme park with them?
If I had a 3-year-old,
Yeah. Or if you're mad, you can throw the 3-year-old. No, I'm just joking.
Here's an interesting chart from Silicon Alley Insider. Words with friends, daily active users, plummeting.
Although, I mean, look at that plummet. Look at the scales of those. So, I mean, there's two.
Yeah.
You know, the scales are totally off there.
Yeah.
But.
I mean, OMG Pop has 12 million active daily users in 6 weeks. But see, that doesn't go forever. Or does it?
This is a bit unfair. The same story says it took AOL 9 years to hit 1 million users, Facebook 9 months, Draw something 9 days.
Wow. But that doesn't mean it's the next Facebook or AOL.
No, it doesn't at all. Yeah. No, it's a simple little.
You know, if I'm them, I take $200 million.
And it wasn't a bad price for Zynga. They got tons of cash, right?
I think that's a good question. I think Zynga might have overpaid. I don't know.
Well, they got a hit game, and they've been buying a lot of studios. So they already bought Area Code in New York to become Zynga New York. So this is just adding to that pool of developers. They have Zynga Seattle. And it's just, you have a hit game, pull it into the Zynga fold, and then promote the next game.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Cheeseburger, where they kind of acquire new memes.
Right. Acquire the meme.
They don't just rest their laurels on cheeseburgers.
Yeah, we're in the meme acquisition business.
Well, I like that a lot, yeah.
Yeah. That's why we invited Brady. We needed somebody somebody like him on this show.
Peter Kafka says we'll pay $180 for draw something and $30 million in employee retention payouts.
See, that's the key, because you hire these guys. You want them to do more games for you. You don't want them to say, okay, you got OMG Pop, see ya.
Right.
Yeah.
And then
$30 million in retention.
For how many employees again was it?
I don't know. How big is it?
Small. Anthony DeRosa on Twitter says that Facebook drew 12% of its total revenue from Zynga in 2011.
Yep.
That's significant, too. And, of course, Zynga has started its own webpage where you can play all the Zynga games minus the Facebook annoying, you know, interference from your friends and all of that stuff. You just play it.
Well, and Facebook is hoping to roll out the credits program beyond just gaming.
Right,
so
right. Facebook wants to be a global currency.
Exactly.
OMG Pop is a 40-person company in New York.
40 people. Wow.
Yeah.
Good for them. I have to say, it is a very derivative game. It is not anything that people haven't seen before. There's nothing original in that game, would you say? Except perhaps the monetization. It's a free game, and they make their money on in-game purchases, which seems now to be the trend. Give away the game, and then, so if you want more colors, for instance, you start with a very limited palette of colors. If you want more colors, you can buy more colors. But you earn coins as you play, but most people are impatient. So this is one of those things where you can... I never gave them a penny, but if you want more bombs or more colors or more other features, you can pay for those. And that's where they're making $100,000 a day. But still, $200 million, that's a lot. That's $100,000. That's, you know, 2 years' worth, 3 years' worth, 4 years' worth, 6 years' worth. 6 years' worth of $100,000 days. I don't know if they're worth that much. That's a lot of money. Speaking of, we don't know how much money, but speaking of acquisitions, it looks like Kevin Rose, our friend Kevin Rose, and Milk were acquired by Google. Kevin's first day was Monday.
He got a haircut.
Did he?
I didn't see that. Well, he scheduled his haircut, according to his Google Plus account.
His on-site Google haircut.
Yep.
Well, he has to fit the free cut.
He'd been waiting, apparently.
Nooglers get first thing they do, they get a haircut, and then they go eat lunch.
It's like the military. You get the shaved head, you get a shaved head.
And if you're a new Apple employee, you get the shakedown from the security team.
Yeah. You get fed disinformation for the first 6 months.
And you get to work on non-existent secret projects.
Oh, man. Don't you want to go work for Google? It surprises me because now there's still a lot of speculation about why Kevin went for this. We don't know how much money there was. The day before the news broke, they closed down their one and only product at Milk, which was Oink, which we liked. But it was not successful. So they had no successful products. Also going to Google, Daniel Burka, who is a great designer, really talented designer.
Yep.
And he did the Dig design. Not all of the Milk team has been invited to stick around, however.
That's the way Google acquisitions work.
The two developers moved on.
They didn't want the programmers. They said, we have plenty of... This is all rumor. Google's not saying anything. They said, according to the stories, we have plenty of engineers. We need designers. But that's...
Well, they do.
They need designers who understand social.
Yes. They really do.
That's a big difference. You know what? I never really got into Oink, but when I heard about it, it struck me that it was sort of like plus one everything in the world.
Right. So there's a synergy then between them.
A little bit. And Dig, you know, obviously is, you know, similar. Plus one is similar to Dig. But it did surprise me. I mean, I don't know Kevin very well, but I know he's big into, he loves the iPhone. He talks about how he loves the iPhone. Oink was an iPhone app, and he just posted on Google Plus that he's looking forward to switching to Android, which is interesting. So I don't know if he's on the Android.
That was the rumors that he was going to go to work for Android. Now the original rumor was he would work for Google Plus. So it's all speculation, but that sounds like he is moving. He's going to be starting to write for Android, not for iOS.
Well, actually, I looked that up just now, and the article that was posted on that on Android and Me says update. Nope. And you know what I was thinking about the designer thing? It's not that Google needs more designers or needs designers who know social. They need designers that the devs will listen to. Because I think that's it's such a dev-dominated culture there. And
so that, the designers
Bauman,
with developer cred.
And
well, certainly
with a product vision that they can get through the engineering.
Kevin is
culture.
Not a designer. Kevin's just a smart guy. Daniel's
a great
designer.
Person.
He's a great
person. Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, he's
well,
a great
he's
yeah,
a good, you know... I think Kevin's a good friend. I offered him a partnership in Twit when we started, along with Patrick Norton. He declined. He had better things to do, which was he was right. But I don't know if – I mean, Dig was a good idea.
Oink was a beautiful product.
Oink was a beautiful product, but I used it for a week.
Yep.
Wasn't very sticky. I don't know. It's an interesting thing. It surprises me because Kevin is also – an angel investor. You know, he took money out of Digg. He had enough, has enough money. I don't think money is a motivator at this point. And he's invested wisely in many cases as an angel investor. It surprises me that he wants a job as an employee. He hasn't been an employee since he worked at G4.
Well, but there's something about learning. Going to a larger company, you get to learn how they do things at scale.
So maybe that's it. He wants to, Yeah. He is a young guy.
And then there's also just the scale of the products there at Google.
Right. We tried to get Kevin on Twitter. He wouldn't come on, right?
And yeah.
Did we ask him for him on Twig?
I did not ask him for Twig.
Let's see if we can get him next week.
All right.
Yeah. Let me ask a question, guys. Why Digg is where it is and why Reddit is where it is?
Reddit almost immediately started beating Digg. I think Digg, you know, Reddit came after Digg. Digg was the original idea. But as soon as Reddit came along, it immediately started beating Digg, just
what
period.
Was it that Reddit did better? Or did it?
Reddit developed a very active community, and I think they fostered the community better than Digg.
Agreed.
Digg got so Digg got so gamed so early on that they had to start taking draconian measures to avoid gaming, and that pissed off the community. It just didn't feel. It may have been hoisted by its own success, but it didn't. Yeah. It didn't feel as small and tight a community as Reddit did. I don't know, chat room. Why did Reddit beat Digg?
Digg, they say, became a troll fest.
Subreddits is a good point.
Subreddits are great. Subreddits, we use subreddits for a couple of our shows. Tom uses subreddits, and I think subreddits.
But it allows porn.
You know what?
Yeah.
Don't undersell that. By the way, Google pulled a user-created Reddit app from the Play Store because of the porn. I didn't know Google was anti-porn. I thought they liked porn.
They restored it, though.
Did they? Oh, good.
Thank God. They did.
It was automatic.
The NSFW warnings kind of flagged their review system.
I get it.
Yeah. Listen, I don't think this is about technical features. Like, you know, you're... A social apps community is its best feature, bottom line.
Right.
I mean, not only the community. Certainly, you have to have product designers that are listening to the community and adding in features that help the community help themselves. But, it's definitely about community with Reddit and good designers, you know, helping them along.
Well, I like the subreddit theory. Because, I mean, you know, in Digg, they have this sort of semi-war on their most popular users, like Mr. Baby Man.
Right.
Yeah. And there could only be one Mr. Baby Man for Digg, whereas with subreddits, it didn't really matter.
Everybody can have their own.
Well, that's the essence of scale, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. J.C. Calhoun in the chat room says that, you know, Digg 4 ruined Digg, and I think to some extent it's true. There's that jumping shark moment for a company when a design goes too far or something goes too far, and I don't really understand the subtlety of what happened with
somebody
number 4.
Pointed out the irony of the fact that the Kevin Rose story getting bought by Google did not make it to the front page of Digg. Which really tells you something. Because it used to be if Kevin farted, Digg would put it on the number. It would be the front page immediately on Digg.
I've got to admit, I was when Business Week put Kevin on the cover as the $60 million man, I think it was. You know, I wrote in my first book that Kevin was going to be the next Murdoch. That was before Murdoch was evil. Well, wasn't as evil. You know, and I still have a great respect for Kevin. I like him.
I adore Kevin. I think he's brilliant and he's wonderful. Cool.
But I think it's a case, you know, it's a second novel pressure, right? You come out with Digg and Digg Nation to the side and Kevin's personality.
Digg Nation really was Kevin's greatest success. I think there's no question that
really
was the greatest success.
It really was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it's a second act problem.
Right.
And so maybe, you know, I agree with the idea that the large company, it's also that the pressure of getting milk going and saying, you know, maybe I don't have a great idea right now. And to go to Google and learn, and you're going to learn in a tremendous amount. I think it makes sense. I would still bet, you know, I'll bet Kevin Long. I would too.
I would too. Although I shouldn't say this. if I weren't good friends with Kevin, I might say that the story here is how few great designers there are out there, and how hard it is to find talent for a company like Google.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that to me, that's what this indicates to me. That they pick up milk, which is not a huge, it's not OMG Pop. But of course it didn't sell for $200 million, I don't think. But good designers, talented people who understand social are hard to find. And Google needs them. I am. I'm very jealous of Kevin. That's exactly it.
Yes. I think it's a really good move for Google. I don't quite understand why it was a good move for Kevin, but good for him.
Yeah, exactly.
And I do think he's a great product designer. Oink didn't go big, but it was a really beautifully designed.
It was beautiful. And
app.
That's Daniel. Yep. That's Daniel right there. Really talented. Chris Hutchins, very talented. Really, it's a good group.
What should Kevin do? What do you wish Kevin would do anywhere at Google?
I think Google Plus needs his. I mean, was the original idea. Was people thought maybe he'd go to Google Plus, but you know where I think that the second theory that maybe rings a little truer is YouTube. They need somebody. You know, Tim Shea at Next New Networks is the guy right now who's bringing in content to YouTube. They need somebody like Kevin, who's really more of a foreground guy, to cultivate and develop.
Oh, I never even thought of that. Right. Yeah. So Tim Shea is really training people how to make good stuff. Does Kevin become a star there?
No, I think Kevin becomes
behind the scenes.
He's not behind. He's a foreground guy, but it's really about marshaling great talent and great content to YouTube. Clearly, Google wants to do that, and that would be a great place for Kevin. That's something Kevin loves, wants to do. He brings the hip.
Does he have a conflict of interest with Kevin Rev3? How's Rev3 doing?
He is on, I believe he has a stake in it. Is he on the board? I think he's on the board at Revision 3. I'm not sure. It was his, you know, he started it. So I'm not sure that's why the rumor, my thought, if they do that, is maybe they also acquire Revision 3. Because Revision 3 is much like Next New Networks. It's a YouTube.
I keep arguing here that Google can't own content. They may be stupid enough to go do it. But with Next New Networks, they're basically sloughing off the shows and keeping the expertise. Revision 3 is its show.
No, that's not true. Revision 3 pivoted.
No?
Revision 3 was a content creator. They've become a content aggregator. Their biggest shows now are YouTube stars that they, just like Next New Networks, that they like, what is
Epic,
it?
Epic Mealtime.
Epic Mealtime. That other guy, whatever. I'm not a YouTube expert. What's his name? Philip DeFranco.
I think
those people.
So their value is in what, monetizing, distributing, educating, all of the above.
Yeah, and they know how to create content. They know how to. They're very much like Next New Networks. That would be the argument against it. Is there some redundancy there? I don't know. Just a thought. We're gonna take a break. I think the big story, or the one I'd love to talk about, is what the hell's the Wall Street Journal smoking? They say big time search changes coming to Google. Really?
They just learned how to use it, Leo, so it all looks new to them.
Really? Really? We've been waiting, because that story was a week ago. Still hasn't happened. Maybe it's coming. What are they thinking about? Before we talk about that, let's talk about GoToMyPC from Citrix, a great way to access your computer wherever you are, including, and this is what I love, from your iPad, your new iPad, it looks beautiful, your iPhone, or any computer, whenever you can get online. Here's the deal. Go to the website, gotomypc.com. Use the offer code TWIG. You can try it free for 30 days. Put it on your computer at work, Mac or PC, and then hit the road. And the next time somebody calls you and said, oh, there's an emergency, we need you to do something at work, you just whip out your iPhone. You say, I got it. No problem right here. Your desktop computer is on your iPhone. And with that new Retina display on the iPad, man, you see your whole desktop. It's gorgeous. It's the missing link. It turns your iPad or your iPhone into the computer at work. You could send, receive email, access any network resource, run any program, send, edit, save files from anywhere. It's convenient. It's very reliable. And really important now, we see these more and more of these exploits with remote desktop tools. This one is secure and always has been. 128-bit SSL, so you can use it anywhere. It uses NAT traversal, so there's no need to reconfigure your firewall opening holes. No, this works so great. It is a lifesaver. It's easy to use, and it's free for 30 days if you visit gotomypc.com. Click the try it free button, the offer code TWIG, TWIG, and then get the free app. The app, they don't even charge for the app, so you can get it free on your iPhone, iPad. Put it on everything so that you're always ready whenever you need to access your office PC. Gotomypc.com, click the try it free button, the offer code is TWIG. We thank them and our good friends at Citrix for all their support. So when did this Wall Street Journal come out? It came out a week ago? More than a week ago now. saying Google is about to make one of the biggest changes in the history of offering web search. Semantic smarts, direct answers, the Bingification of Google. When did that happen? Over the next few, maybe it's still going to happen. Over the next few months, Google's search engine will begin spitting out more than a list of blue web links. It will also present more facts and direct answers to queries at the top of the search results page. I admit that's one of the things we talked about last week, didn't we, Gina? The calculator and all that.
Yep.
Convert.
Yeah.
Or definitions.
Definitions.
Yeah, the one box, yeah.
Always have loved that. So are we going to see more of that?
Airlines. Yeah, that's what I've been saying for a long time. Bradley Horowitz has been saying that Google is not just going to be 10 blue links. He said that months ago. We've said it on the show ages ago.
Right.
Quoted it.
So what is
it? We've seen Google going to answers. There's nothing new here.
And Danny Sullivan did this great, great piece just tearing this article to bits, saying exactly this. You know, what's new? There's nothing new here.
They already do. I think you hit the nail on the head that the journal just started using Google. And so this is all new to them. Wow. I want to see a piece in the Wall Street Journal. Find anything on the web fast. This thing called Google.com. Amazing. What is Google Squared?
That was their old kind of data app that came out right after Freebase. And I think Fusion Tables is the successor of that.
They closed it last year.
Yeah, but Fusion Tables is their new one.
It's still in the search.
Well, it's more of a data app that you can use on the side. So it's where you can gather, visualize, and share your data online.
So
it's a way of making data mashups.
What Danny says is, my take is that Google is pushing these technologies for good PR. In other words, the Google PR people are calling. Oh, that's kind of cool. Where do I find that?
Fusion tables.
I'll just search for Fusion Tables. That Google's PR has been pushing this, kind of in response to the negative coverage of Search Plus Your World, to counter that bad PR. And places like Mashable and Wall Street Journal are just saying, yeah, we'll write a story. I guess, you know, for real people, it's news, maybe.
Yeah, it does seem like it might have just been PR gone a little bit bad or a little bit out of hand. Amit Singhal posted on Google Plus saying some recent news coverage sparked interest in where we are and where we're headed. And he basically said, we're improving our search every single day. And we're trying to understand what you mean when you say, you know, what is the deepest lake in the United States? Right now, we don't know what you mean by deep or what you mean by lake, but we just try to, you know, pick a web page that gives you the right fact. We're working toward that semantic search where we do know what a lake is and we do know what deep means, and we will be able to give you an answer, you know, similar to Wolfram Alpha.
Right.
But this is what I love about it. I like that he was just kind of like, you know, this nothing has changed. We just decided to talk about it. I gave an interview and hence the media coverage.
Right.
He didn't quite say that, but that's what he was saying. If you read between the lines.
This is what Brad was talking about. This is the Fusion Tables. Gather, visualize, and share your data online. So is it an API to Maps?
It works really well with Maps, but it's just a way you can... They have a lot of public data sets, and you can mash them together, so...
Ah, so the data and the map comes from Google.
Yeah.
Ah, interesting.
Well, public data sets.
Right.
So, I mean, you could also... AWS has a lot of public data sets. It's a way of kind of locking you in.
Right.
You know, there's a GeoIQ. Is another company that does exactly this.
So if I use Amazon Web Services, I get access to these special data sets.
And thus you don't pay for storage, you don't pay for transfer.
Mm, even better.
So it's a way of kind of keeping people in the system.
Boston Globe.
You know, down the line, you can picture AWS offering geodata and mapping tiles.
Right.
That way, and open street maps.
Right. Interesting.
This becomes terribly important in news, and I'm trying to work on some grants now and some projects where, you know, we just have to make open data about government, from government, about our communities more of a standard. And then once you have enough of it, then you start to get a critical mass of saying that you can treat it the same in 1,000 communities, and it scales.
Right.
And then if you get it in 1,000 communities, then the comparisons you can do and the higher level of data you can get is great. And we've just really got to push this. The problem is the news organizations aren't that data savvy. It's hard to find data people because they think it's a special skill. But there's great opportunity there.
Well, so I'm on the fact page for Fusion Tables, and my favorite one is how to work around the JavaScript restrictions on Google Sites. So if you want to embed a Fusion Table, here's how to work
around.
Here's
how to hack.
Here's how to hack Google.
We have those restrictions. We're so sorry. We're not going to turn them off, but here's how you can hack them.
And here's how to drop a cookie on an iPhone.
Exactly. Yeah.
How do you feel about hidden forms? Amit Singhal, writing on Google Plus, said some recent news coverage about Google has sparked interest in where we are and where we're headed in search. Let me just say, every day we're improving our ability to give you the best answers. He does talk about Freebase, as you did, Brad. So anyway, it's I think it's PR. I think it's Google PR saying, why don't you write more stories about our answers? Those are good. Those are really good. Somebody else said that the big story is Matt Cutts and backlinks. So I'm going to search for that. This is from our chat room. Apparently, Google is going to penalize sites that use backlinks. Is that right?
What's a backlink?
I don't know. Let me see here.
Whatever it is, it's bad.
It's apparently bad. And yet, here I found a video on how to use backlinks. What's an effective tool for building links? I don't know. What they're talking about is that people who do too much SEO, you know, attempt to improve their Google search results. Google, hey. Just thinking, will be punished for doing too much optimization. They're changing their algorithm to punish websites that use unnatural sounding search engine optimization to increase their page ranking.
Okay,
so the Google bot's going to figure out when the phrasing is unnatural for humans and actually written for the Google bot.
Yes, that's it.
There's some recursion going on there. I like that.
Yes. Overly optimized sites, they want to level the playing field for other websites who do not concentrate on optimization.
It's no different from being good at being able to figure out when you're getting pitched a line in a bar.
Right.
That's true. It's true. The Googlebot's going to figure out when he's getting a bad line.
If I had a beautiful website, if I told you had a beautiful website, would you press it against me? No! That's very interesting.
Hey, honey, you want to parse?
I'd like to scan your links.
I know your robots.txt says no, but your website saying yes.
Yes, yes. It will target websites that have too many keywords on a page or keywords placed awkwardly in a sentence. Wow, I love that. They just kind of, if you write ungrammatically, you're...
can it punish grammatically incorrect sites as well? I like
too many backlinks and don't have relevant content that solves a problem. It sounds like, I mean, that's hard to do. This is something a human would do. The backlink emperor is dead. Wait a minute, I got an ad here. This is from justaskkim.com, an SEO. Apparently she's an SEO. The backlink emperor is dead. Long live the backlink emperor.
Well, isn't it bigger that Google will never fully win this, but the goal is to kill the dark art of SEO.
Yes.
Kill it.
Yes.
And personalization is the first stab by the wooden spear in the heart of the dark wizards of SEO, mixing my horror metaphors, and constantly just trying. Now it's a catch-22. If you're really good at SEO, I'm not going to hire you because you're too good, because it's not going to work.
Well, there's black hats SEO, right? And then there's white. I mean, I think there's nothing wrong with a blogger or somebody setting a personal website, making sure their title is set.
Have a sitemap and, you know.
Yeah, right, but there's a line of manipulation.
That is SEO.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right, there's a line of manipulation. And that line is constantly moving on both sides, right? The spammer finds the new way to do it. Google comes back. And basically what they want to get to, and I think you said something important there, Leo, when you were quoting that, it's about trying to become human.
Right.
And that's what Facebook and Twitter are, is us and human. And so Google, I mean, you want to talk about AI, this is Google trying to get more human.
Google's always said, just make good content. Make your sites useful. And so what the problem is that a human can determine that very easily. We can look at a site that's SEO optimizing and go, come on, please. you know, or a site that really is genuinely trying to make good content, it's hard to do it algorithmically. And I guess that's, you know, Google, these guys are smart engineers, and I think they think everything is algorithmically solvable.
And they like somebody,
I think they're just checking the client lists of SEO firms.
That's another way to do it.
You know, that would be the way.
So Matt said this at South By. This was perhaps the nugget of information that came out of South By Southwest. He said that the new penalty will be rolled out in the next few weeks. There's the over-optimized Matt Cutts. This Danny Sullivan's panel at South By. The senior product marketing manager of Bing was there.
It was who?
Didn't say
Stephen the, Weiss?
Doesn't say
probably.
The name. Doesn't say the name. It was,
you know, we can say whatever we want about Matt because he's currently on a news diet, and I believe that includes
for
Twig.
For the next month, he cannot listen to us.
Yeah, he can't listen to us, so we could just talk about him.
You know. How convenient right after South By and making this announcement.
Yeah.
Yes.
Here's a transcription of Matt's audio. What about the people optimizing really? I can actually play it. Look at that. How about that? We have the technology.
This all right.
This internet thing is amazing.
Wait a minute. The name of our session.
Is this going to be the whole session?
Doing
it
stuff
is.
With the engines.
Dear Bing and Google, yeah. Help me.
All right. I don't want the whole session. Here's the relevant paragraph.
I'm
what about the people?
South By flashbacks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're standing out in the hallway in the convention center.
Right.
Right now.
Yeah. In 2009, Matt did a video saying there was no such thing as over-optimization. And he would not penalize it. Now he's saying, yes, we will. We will penalize you. What about the people optimizing really hard and doing a lot of SEO? We don't normally pre-announce changes. This is Matt Cutts speaking. But there is something we are working in the last few months and hope to release it in the next months or few weeks. We're trying to level the playing field a bit. All those people doing, for lack of a better word, over-optimization or overly SEO versus those making great content and great sites. We're trying to make Googlebot smarter, make our relevance better, and we're also looking for those who abuse it, like too many keywords on a page or exchange way too many links or go well beyond what you normally expect. We have several engineers on my team working on this right now. His team is the spam fighting team, so they're basically saying we're treating SEO over-optimization as a spam problem.
Well, and Matt knows all the SEO guys. I mean, he was the original Google guy who appeared in the news groups.
Right.
And I used to work on MSN Search. In fact, that's how Gina and I met. Yeah. I was at Microsoft. Microsoft bought a company I worked for, Mongo Music, which was kind of like Pandora, back in 2000. And I ended
that's
up
neat.
Bounced around for a while and ended up on MSN Search. And I, during like my first year on MSN Search, and it was but before we had launched with the new search engine, I went to SES, Danny Sullivan's show at the time, Search Engine Strategies, and I had a couple come up and yell at me asking why their lawn furniture site wasn't at the top of MSN Search. And it was at that conference that I realized that the internet was not a shiny, bright park and candy land
this
of good
intentions.
It was your
moment of disillusion.
It was my
huh?
moment of disillusion, was that show and working that booth.
The loss of innocence.
I remember the moment well.
Sad moment.
And trying to explain it to them was really depressing. It
happened to me last week. That's why I know all about that.
Oh.
I thought the internet was a bright, shiny, happy place for a long time.
And then milk was bought.
And the milk was bought and it was all over. Well, so anyway, I can't say there's anything wrong with that. That's everybody knows that. You go to a site that's doing it, you know immediately. You as a human know. We don't want to see those at the top of search results. So I can understand why that's happening. This kind of ties into the new spam box feature on Gmail. Be careful with this message. It might contain a virus or malicious file, and then learn more. Why is this message in spam? Well, because you marked this before, or it's similar to messages that were detected by our spam filters. This is nice.
Yeah, this is a really good feature. I've had a few false positives in the past few weeks. I pretty much never look at my spam folder, but I realized that I'd missed an email and then found that it had been spammed. And so this new feature will tell you why, which is helpful.
Can you correct it, though? You can't. It doesn't have a button saying.
I assume if you unspam it, that's a learning opportunity.
Okay.
Or if you respond to it.
Yeah.
You are saying this is important.
You can say this is not spam. So if it says the reason why is because you marked this person as spam before,
right?
You could go back and undo it. That, I guess. Or
that
yeah.
would be nice.
Yeah, you know, or if it's a link.
I had the reverse happen this week. I used Priority Inbox, and Kickstarter added their new follow feature. And so yeah. I just got slammed with hooray, whoa. Blah, 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 it's following you, which is awesome.
Turn
but
that right off.
I kept unimportanting it, and they just kept coming in. So finally, I just created a filter to remove it from my Priority Inbox.
This is good. So here's free trial enlargement sent me a note. Saucy young college hotties. And be careful with this message. Similar messages were used to steal people's personal information.
Hmm.
So it flagged it as a phishing attempt.
Because it has a link. And then you can learn more. This is good. Good for Google. That's a great educational feature.
So they're scanning the links inside messages. And if they know sure. that one is malicious, they flag it. I like it.
Yeah.
There's a couple other new Gmail features that just rolled out. Minor ones. You can the buttons across your Gmail inbox, you can change the icons to be text labels. So, in fact, just the other day, I went to go mark a message as spam, and I was like, which button is it? It's this exclamation yeah. mark icon that's, like, not very clear. But if you go into settings, you can change the button labels to words, which are just easier for people who have bad eyesight or just forget what the exclamation point means. And you can that was one little thing. And then the other little thing is that you can label messages before you send them or as you're sending them. So if I'm sending Leo a message and I want to make sure I follow up with him in a week, I can, you know, add my follow-up label, you know, as I compose it. Whereas before,
like
you had
that.
To
like
go
that.
Label it after the fact. So it's really neat to see that after all this time,
they're not Gmail resting still, on their laurels.
No, they're not. Gmail's still getting better.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gmail is one of Google's best products, I think, even better than search in some ways. So it's good to see they're still working on yeah. it.
Why is this message in spam? It contains content that's typically used in spam messages. That's good. So this is good.
You know, I agree with you, Gina, but I just really do not like the redesign of the calendar in mm-hmm. Gmail. It's just, it takes up way too much room. I preferred the older.
I got a long email from somebody complaining that contacts no longer had a call this person number button.
Oh.
In it. Google, it's so funny. Google wields such power. Anything they change.
It affects millions of people.
Affects billions. I mean, it's huge.
Brady, you mean the widget inside Gmail, the calendar widget inside Gmail, or just calendar in general?
Calendar in general.
Yeah.
I mean, I love
the
calendar widget mm-hmm. in Gmail when it works. I find it's like a 60% time I can add an event. But no, just the amount of the header has increased on both of those apps.
Yep. Right, because they added the search box across, like the unified search box across all the products, right?
So and the black bar.
And the black bar and the sandbar. Yeah.
And they just seem to add a lot of header space, even beyond those items.
I have a question, geniuses. So Gmail's been asking me the question constantly, should Gmail be allowed to open these links? And then I go to the explanation page and I can't figure it out.
Oh, your mail to links, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, so if someone's email address shows up on a web page, you can, in Chrome now, and in Firefox as well, I think, you can say, make a Gmail, web-based Gmail, my default mail handler.
Yes, so drives me crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, so that just means that if you click on someone's email address, it'll open up a compose page with the two field filled in. It's pretty useful. But it asks you every time?
No.
Oh, because I don't answer it.
Yeah, you have to.
Because the explanation page was awful.
And it's asked me several times because I have many computers, right? So each computer asks me again.
Right.
While I'm on the subject of things that drive me crazy, when I was going back and forth today trying to test this with Eileen, once I get signed, I have two Gmail accounts open, right? And I have things that string off of them, Reader and Plus and so on, out of each one, different things. And when I get them both running, it runs fine for a few weeks. And then suddenly, if one thing hiccups, try to get them back both running without killing each other. It just drives me nutty.
Yeah,
Google doesn't understand
the switch user drop down.
Yeah, and it confuses the heck out of it. Oh, Sheesh.
Yeah. Yeah, that happens to me as well. The Switch user works kind of like Brady said, like 60% of the time. It's great. Yeah. You can be signed into accounts. But if one gets signed out or your cookies get screwed up somewhere or you go to an app that doesn't support, like if I go to checkout, yeah, things get screwed up and then you have to reconfigure. Now, that's not just you, Jeff. I think that's across the board.
You know, I suddenly reminded, I use a Chrome extension called Toupane that I just tweeted to both to you, Leo, and to Gina, that allows me to shrink the black bar. So there you go.
Cool. Wow, it's nice and tiny.
Yep.
Goes away.
It's really nice.
I like that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, $150 Nexus tablet. Now, this is a rumor I like. We know that $99 was the right price for the HP touchpad. How much would you pay for a Nexus tablet? But first, a word from Ford. The Ford Motor Company.
Ford Motor Company.
I called it the Tord Forest the other day. The Ford Motor Company. Ford.com/cars/Taurus. Wants to talk a little bit about some of the technologies they're putting into their new vehicles, in particular this 2013 Taurus with curve control. Actually, if you go to Ford.com/cars/Taurus, you'll see a whole bunch of new technologies in the Ford Taurus. The adaptive cruise control, the collision warning with brake support, the torque vectoring. Of course, that great EcoBoost engine we've been talking about. But let's talk about this curve control. 100 times a second. 100 times a second. Every 10 milliseconds, the car's computer looks at the roll rate, the yaw rate, the lateral acceleration, wheel speed, and steering angle. It's what it's doing. So that's the roll rate, the yaw rate, the lateral acceleration, the steering angle. It's trying to figure out if you're oversteering. If you're trying to turn the car faster than it can go. And if it says, you know what, this car is going to break away, it immediately takes action. It reduces the engine torque. It applies four-wheel braking. It slows the vehicle up to 10 miles an hour per second. Wet or dry pavement. The upshot of this, and you got to watch the video because there's a really dramatic video of this, is that your car just corners beautifully, much more securely. You don't even know. You don't even know it. It just does it for you. I think, you know, what happened is as technology improves, we can make these cars safer and safer and safer. And it's not building an autonomous car. It's building a car that helps you drive better. And I'm just really impressed with how Ford is putting engineering front and center, making 21st century vehicles. If you want to find out more, best thing to do would be to go drive one at a Ford dealer near you. Or visit the website, Ford.com/car/Taurus, and watch the video of the car with curve control, without the curve control. It's really amazing. Ford.com/car/Taurus, and we thank them so much for their support.
I see worlds colliding here. I imagine Matt Cutts saying to a SEO guy, you're over-torquing!
Break! Leah Busk will join us on Triangulation this afternoon, by the way, 4 o'clock Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern time. She was the founder of TaskRabbit. It's such a cool story. She and her husband were talking, thinking, you know, it would be so cool if we could find somebody to do this chore for us. What was it? Putting together the furniture? I can't remember. It was something like putting together IKEA furniture or shopping. And she said, there ought to be an app for that.
She was also an engineer at IBM, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, she's smart. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she wrote the software. They put out this app, and it's they just recently got a huge, mm-hmm. was it $21 million in venture capital, something like that?
Yeah, she's great. She's speaking at where? Actually, she's one of our main stage speakers.
I guess it is a location-based thing, isn't it?
Geo component to that.
Sure, because you don't want to help her in New York City doing your shopping. In San Francisco, wouldn't help you.
Waiting for your iPad.
That's what you needed.
Oh, I know people who did that.
Pay somebody to get in line
Well, it's more important for the iPhone 4S.
Yeah, than the iPad. The new iPad. You could go right now and get one, I think. The Wear Conference is coming up April 2nd through 4th in San Francisco. Now, Brad is responsible for this conference. So tell us a little bit about I mean, this has just taken off in the last couple of years. When Marissa Meyer was put in charge of location at Google, then you knew this is important.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she spoke last year, and this year we have Brian McDonald, BAM, speaking. And he
Who's
was one
BAM?
Of the, he was one of the co-founders of Keyhole with John Hankey. And
Keyhole, you know, Keyhole, right?
Is Google Earth.
Google Earth.
So, yeah. I mean, back in like 2006 when Microsoft – or when O'Reilly launched this conference, 2005 – we had Bret Taylor take the stage, now CTO of Facebook,
right,
and launch the Google Maps API.
Right.
And when Where was launched, Google Maps wasn't in the cloud. I mean, it was not there. They were still working on it. And Google Earth launched at Where. Virtual Earth launched at Where. Street View launched at Where. And this year we've got a lot of great speakers. Google's going to be there. Foursquare's going to be there. And, you know, one of the big things that we're going to be talking about is kind of the place of Google Maps versus OpenStreetMap right now.
Yeah, that's going to be a hot discussion, isn't it?
Very interesting.
Yeah. It's a big topic right now. I mean, the way I look at it is Google changed the web forever when they released Google Maps in early 2005.
With an
unofficial API that was hacked within 48 hours by Paul Rademacher and Adrian Halavadi. And then 5 months later, when they released a formal Maps API, and they completely democratized mapping on the web.
Huge.
Not the data underneath, but mapping in general. And suddenly a website could put maps on it.
Right.
And then this past fall, they've started adding significant costs to using their maps. And that is driving a lot of companies. StreetEasy, a New York company. Foursquare, another one.
Yeah. Foursquare. Even Apple.
Well, I think that's a different strategic bet.
They just don't like Google.
You know, I mean, Apple has bought, they bought C3,
right,
they bought PlaySpace.
They're
going
to do it themselves,
Poly9.
In other words.
Yeah. Well, they bought one of the things that's happening with OpenStreetMaps is people start to look around, well, wait a minute, I'm going from free with Google Street or Google Maps to suddenly have to pay, in some cases, hundreds of thousands of dollars for it.
Right.
Is there another option? And when they see OpenStreetMap, suddenly they're like, oh, but I can have a little more control.
The cool thing about OSM is it's open source.
Mm-hmm.
It's volunteer-driven, 400,000 volunteers with GPSs or even without, because what you can do is if you know an area, you can correct the map. You just sign up for an account and you can say, no, you know, that's a one-way street now. So presumably with that kind of crowdsourcing, these would be really reliable, up-to-date maps. The only negative is in sparsely populated areas, the maps just disappear.
I mean, it's competitive with Google.
Is it?
And it's
you think?
In places.
Certainly in populated areas, no question.
They both have their strengths and weaknesses.
Okay.
And, I mean, Google has...
Google buys its map data, right?
They used to. They used to buy from TeleAtlas and Navtech,
right,
which used to be independent companies,
right,
and now they're doing a lot of their own. So if you look at the bottom right-hand corner of Google Maps, you can see who the data provider is.
Right.
And about a year and a half, 2 years ago, they switched over to doing a lot of their own data.
Is that in the process, the Street View process?
Well, that's in the process. Street View, they've got, you know, hundreds of cars that they send around. And then also MapMaker, which is an online tool where you can correct streets. You can correct that dead end where your house is.
So in this case, when we look at Petaluma, where we are right now,
Google.
That's Google data.
Yep, and edit in Google MapMaker is a button right next to it.
Now, tell me about that.
Well, if you click on that,
I can fix it.
Exactly, a la OpenStreetMap, very similar.
Hmm.
So they have taken on this task of basically allowing people to change their maps. TeleAtlas does the same thing. I think, I'm not sure if Bing does or not. Well, I mean, Bing Maps has now become Nokia Maps, effectively.
Right.
Through the you know, that was part of the Windows Mobile deal, was Nokia took Windows Mobile, Bing, Microsoft took Nokia Maps.
Hey, Brady,
yeah?
Is MapQuest still in the play in any way at all?
As far as I know, they are the second largest kind of mapping site. So it goes Google, then MapQuest, and then Bing.
Bigger than Bing.
Wow.
Yeah, that's my understanding. It's something like 30-something%.
And where does MapQuest maps come from? Are they Navtech?
They probably use Navtech, TeleAtlas, but they have been investing in OpenStreetMap.
Ah.
And the founder of OpenStreetMap is now at Bing, Steve Coast.
Oh, that's interesting.
He went there about 16 months ago.
Huh.
And so you've got two of the biggest brains, you know, in the geospace. You've got Steve Coast, and then you've got Blaze, who created Photosynth. You know, maybe you've seen the TED Talk.
Yeah, that's
like,
amazing.
He's one of the chief architects at MSN.
Yeah, that's brilliant stuff. But on the other hand, I love the idea of having an open... look, this is our data. This is the Earth. Mm-hmm. I love the idea of it being open. What about companies like Foursquare? They obviously create their own database. You're always adding venues.
Yep.
Do they then POIs, sell it?
Yeah. No, not yet. In fact,
so they have a large POI database at this point.
Well, and you know, Instagram uses it.
Instagram uses their...
When you go to geolocate on Instagram, you'll see a powered by Foursquare.
Is that free or are they licensing it? I wonder. We don't know.
There'll be... It's free, I think.
Hmm. And then there's companies like Simple Geo.
There's interesting stuff coming out in that space. Simple Geo is no more. Simple Geo was bought by Urban Airship about 2 months ago, and the engineers went to Urban Airship. And Urban Airship is a Portland-based company that does messaging.
So the idea of Simple Geo was it was a back-end provider of map information. Then they were aggregating data from all sorts of places.
Yep.
And so if I wanted to do a new app and I needed that data, I could sign up and get the Simple Geo database. Is Urban Airship going to continue doing that, or is that something?
It doesn't seem like they are.
Oh, that's but very interesting. But maybe it wasn't a good business.
Well, down in L.A., there's Factual, and they do a lot of great stuff. And Tyler Bell, who used to run Geo for Yahoo, is working for them as a VP. But the people who are really going to capitalize on this switch to OSM are Development Seed, which is a company out of D.C. run by this guy, Eric Gunderson. And that's who StreetEasy and Foursquare both used. And, you know, I was chatting with him the other day, and it's really, like, in the past year, the data's gotten better.
Yeah.
And the open stack has gotten better. So Leaflets is a JavaScript control for maps. Mapbox is Development Seed's product that they serve the maps from. And then TileMill, which lets you make your own tiles.
What company is that, Brady? I'm sorry.
Development Seed?
Development Seed, because, you know, ThinkUp uses the Google Maps API and they're deprecating version 2 and charging, and ThinkUp installs don't get enough views to go to the charge tier, but because ThinkUp's open source, I've been sort of thinking about using OSM, but I started to look at OSM and I didn't see a lot of API information. So is Development Seed kind of offering an API for easy kind of...
Oh, yeah. You know, I would go check with them. I can put you in touch with Eric. I mean, I'm sure he's...
That'd be great.
The other thing to consider, Gina, is Mapstraction.
Okay.
And Mapstraction is a JavaScript framework that lets you easily switch between, say, Bing, Google, Yahoo. And it's just a framework so that...
Awesome.
You
so it's an abstraction layer on top of the APIs that you write to. And then
if
Google says, hey, we're going to charge you, you say, well, I'll use Bing, and you don't have to do anything new.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. You know, Foursquare switched to OSM on their website, right? But not on their mobile apps. And that to me signaled like, oh, the API, there isn't a good, you know, mobile API quite yet. So in my head, I kind of, you know, the API must not be as good.
No,
but it doesn't sound like that's not the case.
I think it's just a matter of like working through all the bugs. I think updating a mobile app that you have to release through Apple probably takes a little bit longer. Plus, you know, mobile is their lifeblood. So
they got to be careful.
The website, they've got to, you know... Try it out.
Try it out.
You know, drive the Lamborghini around for a little while before you buy it.
The nice thing that both Apple and Foursquare did, they made their own tiles on top of the OSM data. Mm-hmm. So they actually look beautiful. The OSM data, it looks like everybody's map.
But it's important to realize, like, Google Maps enables mapping across the web right now.
Right.
And it really
It's absolutely key.
Changed the web in that way.
So was it, in the end, back to where you started, Brady, was it a mistake for Google to put a paywall up?
It depends on their goals. I mean, they claim that I think only 1% of sites will be affected by this. And gathering all that data is very expensive. They need
to monetize it, I understand.
Pay for
that.
It somehow. Yeah. And
it does feel like a little bait and switch, though, where they will give it away until you're dependent on it, and now we're going to charge you.
But without Google, they would have already been paying tons. So in some ways, you could look at this as they're no longer subsidizing a market, and they're allowing startups to thrive.
One thing
and
that
they're leveling the playing field.
Scares me about OSM when I hear that their leader went to Microsoft, things like that, is... You know, I remember what happened to CDDB when it was sold to Gracenote, and all of a sudden this database that had been created by users... freely giving their time, suddenly became a commercial database. And, you know, in effect, they capitalized on the efforts of users. Is there anything to guarantee that OSM data stays open and free?
I think the licensing is much stronger around that. Also, I think Microsoft, you know, now understands the value of open and open source. And if they were to try to take that
I'd
back?
Hate to see that.
I don't think they could. I mean, there's just the licensing on OpenStreetMap just wouldn't allow them to do that. Steve doesn't own that.
Right.
So I think it's actually like a great endorsement.
It's Creative Commons right
now. For the open model.
Yeah.
They have to get permission from the people who contributed the data to change that licensing.
Good.
And Microsoft, I don't think there's anything that's going to change the licensing of OpenStreetMap, at least by Steve going to Microsoft. I don't think it has anything.
Okay. I'd hate to see that happening.
A number of the other people on the board of OpenStreetMap would not allow that to happen.
So, OpenStreetMap lacks the satellite images. Those are expensive, and obviously you're not going to do that in an open source free.
Well, yeah, but companies like Digital Globe make the satellite images available to the OpenStreetMap folks to create new maps.
So they start from the satellite.
Well, no, it's more that they can use that in some areas. They start, like in the U.S., they use the Tiger data, which was released by U.S.
Right.
But in, say, Haiti, so when Port-au-Prince had the earthquake, they needed maps.
Right.
And so Digital Globe, and I forget the name of the other company, my apologies, you guys, immediately sent their satellites there and then made the images freely available so that OpenStreetMappers around the world could create new maps and let people know. Same thing happened
really,
with Katrina.
Really great stuff, yeah.
And that was, OpenStreetMap has saved lives. And the humanitarian OpenStreetMap team is currently still working in Haiti and in Indonesia. And actually, I hope to go to play with them this summer.
Neat. That's really neat.
Good for you. Yeah. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. It's a vacation. It's what we call vacation.
Now, that's a fun vacation.
It's a Bradycation.
Brady, you are a fountain of knowledge. That was a great
segment. I am fascinated by location. I think it's really an exciting area. And I certainly talk a lot about it as we talk about Google, because clearly Google understands that look at Eric Schmidt's pants example, that search is and tying search to location really adds to the value of the search result.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
I really want is my phone. My phone knows where I am.
Right.
I want all the services online to know where I am based on my phone. I want location added to everything when I want to share it based off smartest server.
Wi-Fi, you get some Wi-Fi location.
You get some,
Yeah, but it's very granular. It's not very granular. It's very macro. So moving along, Nexus tablet, according to Android and Me, the Asus Nexus tablet may be priced as low as $149 for a 7-inch tablet. We know that $99 was enough to sell the HP touchpad to millions. The Amazon Fire is selling quite well at $200. Is this a sweet spot? Would you run out and buy another tablet for $150? It's a quad-core Tegra 3.
$150 is very tempting.
I don't even know if they can make it at that price.
Extremely affordable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's close to an impulse buy.
Would Google be subsidizing it at that price?
I don't know. I mean, they, I don't think that's the question. The question isn't whether we'd buy another one, though we would. The question is obviously whether this would increase the volume immensely. And let me throw in a new number I just saw. I won't use as my number, and because I can't remember the source. I saw it just before showtime that activations of smartphones in China just exceeded those in America.
Wow.
On a daily basis, right? So you start to go back to everything Brady was talking about, mapping, go to the $150 tablet, look at Nokia's, why is Nokia still, even though it's on death throes in our view, why is it still huge? Because it's cheap, it's inexpensive phones and it owns that part of the market. I was just talking with an executive here in Stockholm and, saying we're all iPhone people, but saying that Android's going to take over the world. I think $150 really starts to motivate people who never would have considered a tablet to get one.
Did you get the Google Wage email?
Talk about the final nail in the coffin. I got that email and I was like, this is a joke or it must be spam. Like one of my friends is messing with me. No. Like this was the email that went out. Reminding everyone that Google Wave was shutting down, Wave with a V, but the from name was Google Wage with a G. So it was a typo in the from. So, you know, the G is right above the V on your keyboard. But it was just like, I think, I mean, it seemed like such a sad but yet appropriate ending to. Oh,
it's to like there's one intern responsible at this point. That's it.
Google Wage. It was a good run, Google Wage.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't rub it in.
No, it's okay. I'm glad. It's cathartic for me.
The good news is they are putting spell check in Docs. I don't know if it's related, but they're going to have web-based spell check built into Docs.
This is really cool.
Yeah.
Because it's spell check that learns from Google's index. So if you type, you know, Ickland is an Ickland, it knows to suggest Iceland for the first Ickland and Island for the second one.
Wow.
So it's really smart.
That is much better than anything we've seen before.
That is for the Wall Street Journal to write about it.
Yeah.
In 6 months.
Gee,
I just realized it. The email could have come more appropriately from Google Wake.
Oh.
Oh.
Now that would have hurt.
And we have
it's too
time.
Far away.
Google Wake.
Oh.
Let's see what else. I'm just looking. We have a few more stories we could get to, or we could take a break and get our tool tip and
let's see here
number of the week. I don't want to skip anything, but there's an awful lot more privacy probes. Of course, the Wall Street Journal writing about this. You know, they also, by the way, just so you know, that it's not limited just to Google. The Wall Street Journal had a headline today about Apple. I got it. That was actually, let me see if I can find this. It was talking about the Apple iPad. Oh, it was a great article. And it just showed that at this point, they called Apple faces concern over iPad speed trap. Video speed trap lurks in new iPad. I think what's happened is they've told the headline writers of the Wall Street Journal, please drive traffic. Because the story basically says the new iPad's LTE is so fast, you may be tempted to watch more video than before. That's the story.
What?
What?
That makes no sense.
That's the speed trap?
That's the speed trap. Watch out. You might have to spend more money because it's so fast. And I think what they want to encourage people to think is because LTE downloads so fast, you'll be paying more money for your bandwidth. But that's not the case because a movie is a gigabyte is a gigabyte is a gigabyte. You watch a movie, it doesn't matter how much faster it is, you're using the same amount of data. So what they're really saying is, but because it was so easy to watch that movie, you'll probably watch a lot more. And then you'll have to pay more.
What I saw was tweets from people who were saying that they realized that watching a whole movie is pretty much the month's allocation. And I think what that means is they never watched movies before because they couldn't.
Okay. Right, because it's a gigabyte.
They said, oops, this doesn't take you very far. It's a rotten deal. That's a story. But it's a very different story.
It's a different story than the speed trap lurking in the new iPad. What they should
that's the worldview of the Wall Street Journal now is always, you know, bad technology.
Right. It's very interesting. I mean, I think that, I mean, it's not just Google. It's not just privacy. It's, you know, even Apple, which, as we know, the Journal loves.
Yep.
Google defends hosting site under attack from the MPAA. Hotfile.com is in trouble with the Hollywood folks. It's an internet locker service. The Motion Picture Association of America says people are putting pirated films on there. Google has filed an amicus brief right on Google saying Hotfile is protected by the DMCA. Of course, remember that YouTube would also be under fire. And it's important that people understand how the safe harbor provision works. So Google filed in favor of a friend of the court brief in favor of Hotfile. Thank you, Google.
Oh. They definitely have a horse in this race, but it's nice to see them stand up for the little.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And here from All Things D, Comcast, Verizon say they're itching to fight Google and Apple. This is Peter Kafka writing. So there's a hearing today. Comcast and Verizon testifying in front of a Senate subcommittee saying why it's okay if we work together. We really, it's not a bad thing. By enhancing the cable companies and Verizon's own products and services, the Comcast-Verizon joint venture will compete with similar solutions from AT&T, Dish, Google, Apple, Microsoft, and others, spurring them to respond, perpetuating a cycle of competitive investment. So it's okay if Verizon and Comcast team up. Nothing to say about that. Moving on. I'm just throwing them out. If you have something to say, you can say something about it. Let's see, another Wall Street Journal headline. Amazon adds that robotic touch.
It's actually a fairly cool story. I read it in the New York Times, though. Yeah. But this is Amazon buying Kiva, second largest purchose, the Kiva robots.
It's almost $1 billion, $775 million.
Right. And what I didn't realize about them is that what the robots do is they pick up an entire rack. It looks like a rack, and bring it to the pick and ship person.
I'm surprised Mike Daisy has not done a monologue on this. People have said that it is horrible. He's busy doing other things. It's horrible.
Those poor robots.
The life they lead. No. People do say it's not fun working at an Amazon facility, being the pick and pack person. I imagine it's hard work being a warehouse worker in general. So having robots do the heavy lifting is kind of cool.
You know, back in the early days at Christmas time, all of Amazon would empty out, and everyone from execs down would be at the warehouse.
Right.
And it was only in the past 4 or 5 years, I think, that stopped happening.
Crate and Barrel's using these robots, Gap.
And Amazon wants to have services for everything. For your stuff,
even robots.
Basically.
The Kiva robots cost between a few million dollars to as much as $20 million.
What fascinates me, and this, by the way, Brady, is the email I just sent you a little while ago, or we're going to send you.
Oh, about Tim?
I'm fascinated. Mm-hmm. The mail industry, right? The first class letter is dead. It subsidizes other mail, which includes advertising. That's going to go. And the only profitable portion of delivery, of course, is physical goods. And I've been arguing for a long time that retail at a local level becomes more and more inefficient. It's only good for things that expire or things that require immediate gratification, whether that's, you know, certain things at the drugstore, or whether that's, I got to have the new whatchamacallit pad. But other than that, retail is going to shrink and shrink. And so every time Amazon makes consolidation and fulfillment more efficient, watch out for the consequent effect on local retail.
In Seattle, we have Amazon Fresh. And I'll tell you, it's awesome.
What's that?
Food? Oh, it's grocery.
Amazon delivers your groceries.
I could have my, I'll be home in Seattle tomorrow. I could have my food waiting for me.
Ooh.
When I get there, I think you can get booze. You can definitely get, you know, frozen goods. You pick the delivery time. It drops it off at your door.
Hmm.
It's great. Hmm. And they have CDs, DVDs, books, various electronics if you need it.
Cool.
Hmm. And it's something like you, if you order enough in a month, you become a big radish.
All right, I got one for Jeff. The New York Times has now said, not 20 articles a month, you only get 10. That's it.
Yeah. Listen, when people think that I'm against paying for content, and insert plug for Gutenberg the Geek or two books here, I'm not. And people think that I've said that paywalls will never work. No, I've said that it'll work at the New York Times, and it has worked at the New York Times. The question, though, always becomes, what's the definition of worked, and will it work for others?
Right.
So what's happened here is the Times has always had levers, and they went to in one sense, is a high number of pages before you hit the wall, 20 pages a month, and very few readers hit that number. And those who did, who were the most loyal, got subsidized for the last 6 months or so by a big advertiser. So now the Times is saying, okay, well, that, we didn't die there. Let's change the lever and try to get more revenue. Now, a couple things about this. One is the Times can afford to do this, but other newspapers can't because the Times sells advertising at such a premium, and other crappy newspapers can't. So the Times doesn't want to sell out. It doesn't want to sell what the market will bear. It doesn't want to reduce the cost of its inventory. It actually wants some old unsold inventory, just less of it. But it has to maintain its prices at a high level. So it can afford to do this. It can also afford to do it because it's the New York Times and it's that goddamn good. Now, the contrary of this is the tragedy to me in this, the unspoken story in this, is that when the Times tells us that very, very few people ever hit 20 page views a month, that's a terrible commentary on its engagement.
Yeah.
Or on their tracking.
True.
Right. Well, one or the other, but I think it is the engagement. I think that this is true of news sites generally. When we did research at CUNY, we found that news sites, as a rule, have about 12 page views per user per month, whereas Facebook gets that every day. I'm not saying newspapers should be Facebook, but I am saying that the target's somewhere in the middle. So, you know, to me, strategically, what the Times should be doing is coming up with ways, instead of lowering the wall, make more people hit it. Or I wrote a post a few weeks ago looking at the idea of a reverse pay meter. I know some sites that get traffic from out of their market that is useless to them. So what I've told them, and I'm supposedly an enemy of paywalls, I've said to them, put up a paywall where after the first page you get hit because those people are not valuable to you. You can't monetize them. They actually cost you money, de minimis, in bandwidth. And what you should be doing instead is rewarding the people who bring value to your site. They bring value to your site by reading you, by clicking on your ads, by contributing content, by recommending you, by doing tasks. All these things, if newspapers looked at themselves as being in the relationship business instead of the content sales business, it would turn the economics of the paywall 180. But having said all that, see, you started me, Leo.
I knew I would. I just
shouldn't have done this. having said all that, yes, the Times is magnificent. I pay for the Times. We even get it in paper. Thus, I get the paper free online.
That's how I get it. Yep.
I use its app. I would continue to do so. However, on my iPad, I'm going to confess something to you about my iPad in a second. On my iPad, I read the Times, and I now read The Economist. Mm-hmm. I tried, for example, The New Yorker. It's still, even virtually, piled up in the corner unread.
I know. But at least it takes up no space.
So I didn't want to pay for it. So I canceled that. Today, before the show today, in fact, while I was sitting in my cozy conference room here killing time, I was looking at the apps, the magazine apps and so on, in the news store, newsstand for Apple. And I can't find anything I really want to buy. So, you know, the notion that the Times paywall works is true for the Times, though it has an impact, I think, on the strategy of the Times and how they think. But that's their decision. But I also caution it's not going to work universally.
Jeff,
I'm going to make my confession now. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. I want to hear your confession first.
iPad confession?
Yeah, it is.
It's a different confession. All right, well, then let me put this out there. Like earlier you said that you thought that the Times needs to concentrate on its engagement. So do you think that they should do something like if you've got more than 1,000 Twitter followers and you tweet a New York Times link, then you you get to look at 30 pages a month versus,
talked
about this.
Yeah, and obviously, Gina.
That's a good idea. I like that.
That's right. Was thinking of the 101 ways this could be spammed and gamed, right?
Right, right.
Well, he would be thinking this if he were watching us.
Yeah.
Look what you're missing, Matt, but you don't know you're missing it. Anyway, right. I think what you have to do is look at the relative value of readers. And one company I know started finally looking at the value of readers like in market versus out of market, and it's a huge gap. But that's a kind of negative valuation. If you look at the positive valuation of how people can contribute to the value of what you do, right? So number one, I think, is recommending what you do. And if that – the pure link wouldn't work because obviously you create a Twitter account nobody reads and you do it to get – you know, you've got to have some Twitter clout and it has to have some market value. And there was just a study – oh, God, I meant to put it in who did it? Somebody just did a study. Chat room helping, but you're not media wonky enough to have read this. That finally gave some a monetary. Oh, Google did. Of course, they wrote a post giving a monetary value to social links.
Really? And where is that? I want to see that.
Oh, chat room, help me, help me. Oh, chat room, look at all the Google blogs real quick. There's three little diagrams, one on top of the other, and it shows what the value was. Come on, chat room, come on, you can do it. Ding, 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 ding.
So similar to Clout with a K, what they're trying to do is like give everybody a score or a number.
Wait, is this based on their post-rank acquisition?
I think it might have been. What they're doing is they're giving a financial value to social links.
This is why we get knocked off every time on YouTube. It's that.
All my fault.
It's your fault.
Well, my singing of it was so bad it wouldn't have got us knocked off.
Here, boy, look at this.
There we go.
Look at that. Chat room is so good. Kurt, our winner from the analytics blob in Canada.
Awesome.
There we go. Right, so social
Best
value.
Chat room ever.
Capturing the value of social media using Google Analytics. So tell us what we're looking at.
So it tells you, it tells you that there are a lot of circles, and you can make points with circles. let's see.
I don't understand what I'm saying.
There are 20,000 in a given population. I'm not sure what the population was. There are 20,000 conversions. Of that, 11,000 were assisted social conversions. Right. And of that, 2,300 were the last interaction was a social conversion. That's why, you can give them credit, kind of, right? And it gave a monetary value to all of that. So the conversions, and I don't know what the definition of the conversion was in this context, but it's relative, was worth $113,000. The assists were worth $48,000 of that. The last interaction was worth $8,000 of that. So obviously, if you can manage this and get more of those last interactions, you can make a lot more money. So out of 424 assisted conversions, they put a value to that, so you could know what to do. Then, interestingly, the source of assisted conversions, number one, t.co, which is Twitter. Number two, plus.url.google.com. No, it's not dead, folks. Huh. Number three, Reddit.
It's half the size of Twitter, and Reddit's, again, a fifth the size of it, but...
So, I don't know what their methodology is. But this to me is really, really valuable because it starts to put numbers behind the link economy and the value of those things. So now, Gina, don't get me started. Back to your question. Yes, if you could monetize the value that you bring the New York Times when you specifically tweet an article, the New York Times would be very wise to say, thanks, Gina. Here's 20% of that value that we recognize because that's incremental to us because of you. And you know what? We're not even going to pay you that. We're going to do it as a discount against your sub. And ideally what's going to happen here is you're going to end up with a 100-year credit. And you won't care because it's non-money then. It's non-money to you because you'll never pay and you're still motivated to play the game. It's non-money to the Times because the Times is obviously making more from your value than it would from your subscription. That, right, to me, is the way they should be thinking about this. And they're doing the opposite. Why? Because they think they're in the content selling business, not in the relationship and data business. You shouldn't have got me started.
Wow.
Wow. I fear and look forward to the future where my Twitter follower count or Facebook subscriber count or Clout score or whatever, sort of earns me freebies.
Clout does,
passively.
Clout does. You get stuff from Clout. It's all crap, but...
Isn't that how you ended up in that Vegas club?
You get stuff for having Clout. I haven't looked at it in a while, but I think I got coupons for stuff. Perks. Clout perks, right?
Turned off their email notifications.
Did you guys do...
Yeah, me too. I don't want any perks.
Did you do the $5 for $10 Amazon thing this week?
No, what's that?
Ooh, oh, I did.
I did.
What?
I tried to use my Amazon gift certificate to get the deal, which wasn't going to work. I know. That was awful. That's wrong. It was almost like stealing. It's you pay $5 and you get $10. It was an Amazon local thing.
As their way of thanking you?
Try to get more business.
Oh, it's Amazon local. Oh, okay.
Amazon local.
Look, my Clout's just plummeting. Oh, my God. Oh, no.
I have never looked at my Clout. I have zero idea about my Clout.
So here, let's see our perks. Let's see
I'm going to give you a Clout badge just for that.
I don't have any perks.
I really have never looked.
You haven't participated.
Oh, I haven't participated. But where can I find out what perks I get? Where do I get them? I want some perks.
We've updated our privacy policy to continue participating in Clout.
Yeah, I think I signed out of Clout and now I'm back. Just for you. Giving K's. It's just so stupid.
And you're gone again.
Yeah, I should sign out. Yeah, I should just sign out again. All right, let's get to our tip. This is not a tool that I would like to share with you. Let's get to our tip, our number, and we're going to have two tools because Brad's going to do a tool and I'm going to do a tool. Double tool time.
Confession.
Yes.
Double tool.
Double tool time. So let's start with you, Ms. Gina Trapani, your tip of the week.
My tip of the week is thanks to Eileen. Thank you so much. Humblebundle.com. It's a bundle of games and apps for Android, Mac, and Windows and Linux.
Yeah.
And you buy them for a price that you choose. All the money goes to charity. There's 12 hours left as of right now. So hopefully by the time this podcast goes out, the audio and the video goes out, people still have time to purchase it. And it supports charity. You can unlock the games on Steam. Looks lots of good titles here. And it would retail for $57, but you can pay what you want, and it all goes to charity. So it seemed like a really good cause. Eileen, had you done this? This is Humble Bundle 2. Did you do the first one?
The last one had like World of Goo and Osmos and really cool games. Neat. Yeah. I haven't done this one yet.
So. So these are never before seen games.
Yes.
For Android 2. I don't understand. It says for Android, but it's also for Apple. It's for anything. Or no. This bundle is for Android 2.
It's for a lot of platforms.
Says the games work great on Mac, Windows, Linux, and Android.
Android, yeah.
I'm confused. Well, anyway, they work everywhere. In fact, Windows users are buying much more than Mac or Linux users. So get on it.
So get on it, yeah. Get those numbers up.
You could choose any amount from $100 to a custom amount. And then how you divide it, developers get some, charity, and a humble tip goes to Humble Bundle itself. Well, that's neat. So everybody wins.
Yeah.
Good one.
Jeff, yeah, thanks, Eileen.
Jeff, your number of the week.
I've got a few choices. Today is Twitter's 6th birthday.
Today? 2006 it started. I signed up in December 2006.
You are the pioneer.
But see, I quit.
I would love you.
I quit.
That's right.
In like March 2007.
Because you're like, this is stupid.
No, I liked it.
No,
because I was mad.
He overheated on it. He over-torqued.
No, I got mad because I thought that they were a silo way back then. and I didn't like the idea of contributing all this content to somebody who was going to hold on to it. So I quit. Fool that I am. Justina Zarek. You joined in September 2006, Bradley?
Yep.
Brady?
Yep.
Brady?
That's how you get to be in the first name club.
Yeah, you have your name, at Brady.
Name.
Wow.
Yeah.
Except Leo won't find you because he's looking for Bradley.
I know. So that's me. That's just me.
You and, like, my seventh grade teacher. Bradley, why didn't you do your homework last night?
Brady falls in the forest and there's no one there. So 2006, wow. And so early, too, March 2006. But it didn't really take off until South by Southwest in
2007,
a year later.
Yeah, it was a year later. That's when it had its big. That's when I finally signed up. I said, I keep hearing about the stupid Twitter thing. Let me just sign up and post my first tweet. I'm in the under 1 million club. You can see if your user ID, if my user ID is just under, it's like 930,000. I take a lot of pride in that. That's my early adopter.
I'm mad at myself for quitting because I would have like a really low number. What is your number, Brady?
I think it's like 5,000 something.
Wow.
Nice.
So you can enter your Twitter username at Twibirthday, TWBIRTHDAY, and find out when you joined Twitter. But it won't find my first one. It'll find my... Justina Zarek talked me into rejoining in April 2007.
I like the was born on Twitter.
And my godfather, this is the first person I followed, was Miss Rogue.
My godfather was Laughing Squid. I'm in the 92nd percentile.
Wow. I'm in the 95th. So how could that be?
You have Miss Rogue.
Oh, I was looking at Miss Rogue. She joined in July.
Yep.
That's Tara Hunt, of course. So let me back up.
She's wonderful.
So I'm in the 82nd percentile. That's fun, isn't it? You could see who your first follow was and when you joined, and you get a little birth certificate. But that's not my tool. So happy birthday, Twitter. You got another number? Go ahead.
Happy birthday, Twitter. Well, I'll just remember one real quick. I found this interesting. On March 18, a weekend day, which is important to this tale, Google's share of the browser market exceeded that of IE, but only for one day because that's a weekend day when we have a choice. But it shows where it goes here that I think the EU went after IE, evil Microsoft, with Internet Explorer, was going to take over the world. Never mind.
Forget about it.
Well, that's what happens when you stop working on something for about 5 years.
Yeah.
People stop using it.
Plus, you don't put it on a platform like the Mac, which is beating the hell out of you. And then I want to make a little confession here, just to forestall things. I'm going to return my second iPad. But
what?
I'm only doing it because I made a mistake at the AT&T.
You want Verizon LTE?
I want Verizon, yeah. And it's still unopened, so I don't pay the $50 charge. I am going to return a second iPad. But I do love
no it. Reboxing. Come on.
No, he can't rebox it because then he'd have the restocking.
Oh, I didn't even take it out of the shipping box.
Oh wow. Yeah, no, I think Verizon's the way to go. Especially you're in New York, right? You'll get great performance.
Well, the Wall Street Journal scared me, so.
All right, I got a silly tool, but I thank the chat room for this one. They recommended Yumly, which is a semantic search for recipes. It understands what you're saying. And the best, and one of the things they've added now is they have a Facebook app. So when you search for English cucumber vodka infusion, everybody on Facebook will know what you're up to. But my it has some nice filters here. You can have it less salty or more salty, less savory or more savory, sour, bitter, sweet, spicy. You can have food allergies. You could say,
like a dating service.
I'm a pescatarian. You can, or a vegetarian or a vegan. Got nutrition, time and price, time of cooking, of course. This is a very nice search engine for recipes. But my favorite part is it's social. And if you turn on the social, you can have friends. Your friends on Yumly are called taste buds. And I like that. That's the only reason I'm recommending it, because you can have taste buds.
Rimshot.
Yeah. But Brady has a very good, very good one. I'm gonna give you.
Oh, or you could just bring up the. Okay.
Well, you can bring it up. If you have some fun searches you want to show.
Sure. Yeah.
I think we've talked a little bit about if this then that before, but let's see what a master of geolocation can do with IFTTT.
Oh, this is going to be good.
.com. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if we'll have to do anything magic to his that's going to do that. Yeah. And then can you see him?
No, I don't.
You're going to have to probably change your resolution on your I don't know. It should be the same. Yes. Yes, he's
there we
going
go.
To 1080, right? Is that what you did?
I just turned on
mirroring.
As
the master of Ignite, yeah, mirroring is what you want. You're the master of Ignite. You should know how to do this. An Ignite master should know how to immediately
we
take
do this
a
an hour ahead of time.
I know. That's yeah.
So are you finding me, Eileen?
No.
Jeff, I'll do it here.
See you.
You walk me through.
But you got to give it back the cord.
Here you go.
TTT.com.
So if this then that, if you go to if this then that, .com/WTF.
I love that.
Then
I have too many T's in my AFTTT.
I do that sometimes. Ift.
Ift.
So basically, if this then that lets you tie together different services. So I can tie together Evernote, Gmail, Foursquare, Instagram, BuzzFeed. So, you know, as I like to joke, you know, I can automate my watching of lolcat or, you know, finding lolcats. But I use this for stuff like I send all my Instagram photos to Facebook. I have all my Foursquare check-ins go to my Google Calendar so I can look back and see where I actually went. I have some selected tweets go to Google Talk. If I favorite a song on SoundCloud, it goes to Dropbox.
That's cool.
All my Facebook and Instagram photos go to Dropbox. All my Instapaper links go to Evernote. And so it's like Yahoo Pipes, but much easier to use.
Yeah.
I've described it as like Yahoo Pipes, but designed by 37 Signals.
Yeah.
So it's like very straight to the point and opinionated.
So for instance, if I posted a new bookmark to Pinboard, then it automatically tweets it.
Yep.
And if my mom emails me,
then it goes to SMS.
Yeah, it texts me and says, "Mom just emailed you." She'll be very happy to know.
And there's tons of recipes. There's about 40 different services you can tie together. But like, you know, just browsing the recipes, which is how you share what's been done before.
Ooh, this is a good one. When Amazon adds a new album to its top free albums, That's good.
I
send
get
me an
the,
email.
The Kindle top books, too.
Yeah, that's
if
nice.
If it's raining tomorrow, I'll send you an email.
Yeah.
You could automate thanking people in Twitter, which doesn't seem like much of a thanks, but, you know, I guess it's something.
Thank you for following me.
Ooh, start a Gmail, send it to Evernote. That's kind of awesome, actually. Archive my tweets to Google Calendar.
They've really added. They've added stuff since I've seen
I bet it's all user-based.
Yes. Yeah.
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 What do we imagine the business model is?
Well, I mean, geez, I don't know
for sure.
There's no business model. But, I mean, you could easily picture this for the enterprise, right? You know, letting folks sign up for enterprise accounts.
I don't want it to die.
Yeah. No, neither do I. I mean, I would pay for this in certain cases.
It's like you unravel. It's like pulling one thread from your sweater, and you're going to end up in a bundle of yarn, right? Ready?
Well, it's like there's a great post by the fellow who runs Pinboard, Mache, about why you should yell at anybody who doesn't charge for their app. Because
right.
Then it will go away.
That's why
and
I like Pinboard.
You're totally right about if this and that. And they just came out in the past year, and they've got some amount of funding, but not so much that I think they can just, last forever without revenue. So I'm pretty sure they have plans as they're perfecting the service. But I really do see a lot of enterprise uses for this. Just kind of like the GitHub model of it's free if you use it publicly and you pay to use it privately.
I like
which
this.
I think is a great model in general for these types of services.
Sync readability to Instapaper. Then I don't have to choose.
Yep.
I like that.
What I would really like, the number one feature I would like, and this is more on Marco's side, is Instapaper content goes to Evernote. Because almost anything that I read on Instapaper, I want to be able to search for
save it
on Evernote.
On Evernote, yeah. This has a nice Evernote integration.
Yep.
If I'm mentioned on Twitter, give me a call and tell me who said what. It'll phone you.
Wow.
I
would love that, except for when whatever the Brady quarterback guy is playing.
Yeah, you know.
I get lots of like, go long, Brady. Go long. Yeah, that's not
that's
really.
That's a different Brady.
I just started blocking people who don't know how to use Twitter.
He's the Brady.
Is he? I don't know.
You're
never,
the Brady. Well, I'm saying Brady's the Brady. This other guy's just the quarterback.
Now we've got a Tebow story coming up. Tebow Brady is going to be huge, by the way. I don't know sports, but even I know that.
Thank you. It's so nice to have you, Brady Forrest. If you haven't yet signed up for the Wear Conference, not much time remains. It's coming up April 2nd through 4th in San Francisco. Go to wearconf.com.
And actually, we've got a 25% discount for everyone watching. Sorry.
What do I type? Twit?
Twit.
That's easy. Register online right now. These are all the various, they even got an exhibit only for $25. But if you use Twit, you'll save some money on that. This is great.
Buy yourself a latte.
Yeah, thank you. Very nice. Thank you, Brady. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I was glad that I was down from Seattle to be here.
I am really glad, too. And you should go to Google I.O., everybody, and watch Brady's Ignite presentation, because Jeff Jarvis will be one of the speeches.
Yep. Yeah, and we'll put out like a call for talks for that.
Ignite is so much fun.
Ignite's awesome. And last year's it was at Google I.O. was particularly good. I've been to a bunch of them, but the Google I.O. one, I do remember it. It was really good.
Yeah.
We had to, unfortunately, Jane's Addiction was practicing upstairs during it. So, but we got beer.
Well, that's good. Brady Forrest, thank you so much for joining us. Gina Trapani is at smarterware.org and thinkupapp.com and, of course, on Google Plus. And that's, that's it. That's all. And she wrote the book on Google Wage.
Oh, that's it.
Shiva for it.
Now, I think there's an app in there. There's an app, a Google Wage. What could that be? It could be like a database of wages or something. That could be good.
It's where you only get paid by Google Wallet credits.
Yes. That's what I thought you were going to do the $5 for, because everybody who has a Google Wallet got $5 extra. Because they did such a crappy job or something. I don't know. Thank you, Google. How many people? That means tells you they don't have very many users of Google Wallet.
Yeah, they're wanting more. That's for sure.
We'll give you $5. It's probably five people. It's nothing. Jeff Jarvis is at buzzmachine.com. That's his blog. He's also in Stockholm speaking. And you can.
Yo, school you via an omelet.
Are you going to talk about public parts?
That's all I'm going to say tomorrow. I'm going to go up stage and say that.
Public parts.
Yes, I'm going to ramp it up a little bit. I'm going to act like the Wall Street Journal and get a sensationalistic and say that our internet is in danger, people.
This is a country where they protect freedoms,
and we need them.
That's why you have so much bandwidth. BuzzMachine.com, buy the book. Thank you, Jeff.
And Gutenberg the Geek, Kindle Single.
Oh, yeah, Kindle Single, 99 cents. Gutenberg the Geek. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We do This Week in Google, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2000 UTC at live.twit.tv or just twit.tv. If you miss a show, don't worry. You can download all of our episodes. In fact, if you subscribe, you'll never miss a show at twit.tv. TNT is coming up next. Don't forget, at 4 p.m., we're going to talk to Leah Busk about Task Rabbit on triangulation. See you next time on This Week in Google. I did buy the Dyson. In fact, I'm going to review, I think, the Dyson on before you buy. Dyson vacuum.
Oh, that's my favorite, too.
I have the cordless, which is amazing.
The cordless. Yeah. I have the one with the ball, so you can kind of like move it around and flex it under. Yeah. Yay. Did you get a haircut? Looks cute.
I did.
Looks very
good.
Yeah, I know.
Boy, chicks know that stuff.
It's a little short, but thank you.
Yeah, it looks cute.
You know what?
It was part of their brain.
Every one of these is exactly right.
You're not pink. Yeah. You look great in Stockholm.
So I decided I have to move here and just take out a room in this hotel.
Absolutely.
It looks like it's so square and severe. I thought you were in a radio station.
Where are you?
I want to be nice to them. I'm in the Scandic Grand Central Hotel. In my room, I did a Skype call this morning on audio, and it just didn't work at all. I thought, oh, no. So then I did a speed test later in the day, and in the room on Wi-Fi, I was getting 12 up, 17 down. And Eileen, never satisfied, said, well, if you got that room with the hardwire, why don't you go try it out? So I'm in a conference room, and I got 72 down and 58 up.
Good. It's clear.
So you are clear and good to go.